Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
Why do I always have to bring us in now?
Because you won the audition.
You won the audition.
For season three. You're winning three. Auditions left and right.
Season three lead. Season three lead. Thanks so much for the opportunity to you both. Really quite grateful for the vote of confidence. Anyway, hi, David and Mac. How are you both? How was your week?
Hello again. We record this virtually, so it was great to this last week see everyone in person as we got to be together earlier this week at the Jewish Community Pantry on Center Street in Metcalf Park to debut the new mural that was co-created with artists working in education, Metcalf Park Community Bridges, as well as the aforementioned Jewish Community Pantry on Center Street. So it was great to see that work be unveiled.
Yeah, it was really, really nice to be with all of you, but even more nice to be with, I'm kidding. It was just so nice to be with, it was sort of this really interesting, like kind of combination, at least for me, right? Combination of all of my worlds, right? Like having, being at the Jewish Community Food Pantry. And then also, I think for those of you know, right, like my initial kind of entry into the nonprofit world was at the Jewish Federation of Greater Los Angeles. So to have the art stuff meet the fighting hunger stuff, meeting sort of Jewish communal professionalism or the Jewish communal professional world, was just nice to be able to kind of be in that milieu with all of you and with all of them, and God, it just felt so welcoming to be and felt like home, right? To have folks talk about Rosh Hashanah and the Torah and community building and how all of this comes together. It felt like home to me.
Yeah. So celebrating our teammate Antoine Carter, who leads our neighborhoods work, and Metcalf Park is one of our partner neighborhoods, and this is part of their campaign hashtag Metcalf Park Painted, where they are trying to do their best to bring vibrancy on the walls of Metcalf Park in the community. When I say they, it's Metcalf Park Community Bridges, our sort of partnering organization there. And so this is one of the elements of this campaign that has come to fruition. So that was super cool. And just a bit about the backstory, Metcalf Park Community Bridges interviewed 100 residents about what images they wanted to see in their neighborhoods. And from those feedback, they shared that feedback with the artist that was connected from Artists Working in Education, Linnea Sproles. And Linnea put that into 5 panels that are now around 2950 North Center, right, adjacent to the Jewish Community Pantry. And so we all got together to celebrate this unveiling. And as David said, it was great to see not just our team in person, but to see the community out and celebrating this.
Yeah, I mean, it feels good to keep getting back to things that feel slightly more normal, whatever that means. But, you know, it's so rare that we get to see, I think, Antoine in his element of being in person with community partners and celebrating the completion of something. And so it was really great, to have that. And it's kind of been, for me, a strangely return to normal sort of week, in that I've had a couple rehearsals getting back rehearsals. Out there performing. Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
So wait, did you win that audition?
I did win that audition. That's right. I'm a
you
violist.
You beat all of the other viola players in the...
There was no one else. There was no one else. It's just me.
Lindsay was given a rose by the conductor at the end of the audition. So it's kind of weird, but very pop culture relevant as well.
That's right. That's right. So as you'll hear a lot about West Bend in there. I think thriving downtown cultural scene, but you can find me there in a couple of weeks performing with the Kettle Moraine Symphony.
And so that's kind of nice segue into this sort of our conversation before we head into the interview. Oh, by the way, our interview is with Heather Dunn, Chief Financial Officer of West Bend Insurance.
There it is.
We should plug the guest. Also, Heather is also one of our civic leaders, so we'll be talking to her after the break. But what's unique about Heather, and I think what ties into this, is Heather is not just a financial leader, but also a singer, and also, you know, loves art and culture and influences her. And so that's what you're talking about, Lindsay, that we're not just people who work at Imagine during the day, but we also have pursuits, celebrity pursuits. So that's this segment. And you just mentioned, this is where you've become a multi-hyphenate, because it's not just, you're not just a violist for the Kettle Moraine Symphony Orchestra. You're also a...
an alto in the Bel Canto Chorus.
An alto in the Bel Canto Chorus. And I got to see you perform a couple years ago. It feels like a decade ago. But that was pretty awesome. And then you're also...
I don't know. Pianist?
I thought there was a third role. I'm sorry. I thought there was a third organization you were connected to.
Oh, well, that's it for now. Those are my public affiliations for now. I'm auditioning for a sub spot with another orchestra. We'll keep that
What's a sub spot?
It means they don't have any full-time openings, but if someone has to not play a concert, you would get invited like a substitute.
You're in the pool.
Not like fourth chair or fourth row, but like a substitute.
Right.
You're in the pool. Yeah. You're in the pool, but which seems like it's like a pathway on to being more, right? Like the
We'll see. Audition on Tuesday. I got to practice. So,
I didn't mean to jinx you.
Audition tonight. Audition tonight.
Whoa. Oh, so will we learn as to whether or not you want another audition next week?
Sure.
I love keeping score of all the auditions you're winning.
You know what? This is a new segment on the show where we just keep auditioning Lindsay to different performance groups in town. And it's just it's a weekly challenge.
I mean, we might have to expand beyond music. We'll see how it goes. Hey, Sunstone Studios, can I come audition for
something? That's right.
Yeah.
Where is Lindsay auditioning this week? And did she
that's a new segment. Where is Lindsay auditioning this week? So where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? We're in Milwaukee is Lindsay auditioning.
Oh, I love it. Can it sort of be like Women on the Street style interviews where she's like interviewing people as she's auditioning?
Yeah, she needs to have a microphone on her and being like wait in the waiting room, like, hey, what's your deal? What's going on? Hey, you know. Yes.
We'll see how it goes. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I think this might be
the end of my run.
By the 14th iteration of this series, I'm really wondering what you'll be auditioning for at this point. Like ventriloquist in the Menominee Falls, ventriloquism, you know.
Mac, can you train me up to audition for some sketch comedy troupe?
Yeah, we can. You probably will. And that's a great segue to what I've had a couple pursuits. I'm actually name a couple pursuits. One, I was recently an extra in a commercial. Thanks, Pat Buckley. Shout out. I like to consider myself, you know how Wes Anderson has like a theater ensemble? I'm in the Pat Buckley theater ensemble when he just needs extras, like he needs someone to hold space. And so, yeah, I was in a commercial that was filming in the Third Ward a couple weeks ago.
Can you see what it was for?
I can tell you the theme of it. Well, it's for Acuity Insurance. We'll find out later if we can talk about this. But the premise of it was the story of the commercial. It's also print, by the way. So it's going to be print. I'm going to be in the background on print as well as on TV, regional. Someone starting a new furniture business. And so the setting was a grand opening of this furniture business. And I was in the background. And so my role was to have a 3-step radius, and I was to look at 3 items really intently that I was very interested in looking at. So, I did that about 40 times, 40 takes of back at one.
You knew those objects really well.
I knew. Oh, I created backstory. I created a reason why I was there. But no, it was a non-speaking part. And anyway, so that's that. And I look forward to doing more extra work in the future. And then the other project is I'm working on this thing called Comedy Six Pack. I was invited by Megan McGee to be part of a group writing sketches and videotaping them. That'll be shown in December. So it started in March. And so we've had this campaign of like every month we get to write sketches and then we rehearse them. And we're actually going to do both Zoom based. At the time when this project started, it was Zoom based. But as hopefully the pandemic is improving, we'll actually do some filming in October. And we'll experiment with actually doing in person. So yeah, that's been an experience. I haven't done sketch writing and I don't know any of these folks outside of Megan. So that was kind of cool. And so that's been an interesting, fun experience to co-write and co-direct. And so, yeah, I direct the sketch and I'm in a few of them. So we kind of rotate around 6 sketches and all that. So that's my project, side project.
When is that on the calendar?
December will be the show. I'm not sure if it's a live show. I think, again, it's all pandemic dependent, right? Can we be together? But But we are, you know, these are all videotapes. So these are not performed live. These are all going to be recorded. So I think what's kind of cool is that there's a thematic tie with all of them. So that's kind of fun. So that's, it's been a long time since I've done sketch. And I have to admit that there's the people on the call in this group are a lot more experienced, like that, or like they have more chops lately. So my role in this group is just to be mainly quiet and just write and not take up too much space.
So basically like being an extra in Pat Buckley's commercial.
Exactly. Exactly. Like how I am on this podcast is not how I am with them. If that makes sense.
That is hard to believe.
It's hard to believe, but I don't want to be that guy is what I'm saying. I just want to do the work and not, you know. It's serious business comedy. So that's me. How about you, David? But I know you have so much extra time.
Yeah.
As the CEO of this organization.
Work keeps me kind of busy. But I think, the last few years I've done a couple of readings for a theater company, right? Which is basically the right amount of engagement for me, which is show up, read a part, go home. But I think the really fascinating thing about this job, right, is that like it has sort of reconnected me to my love of movies and my love of performing. I've revisited a few screenplays to start tinkering again. And I've been watching a lot of movies and actually almost went out to audition for Sunstone Studios' Toil and Trouble, which is coming this fall. But I was out in the Badlands for a vacation a couple of weeks ago, so I missed that. It's been sort of on my mind, right? Like whether or not there'd be some opportunity for me to find my way back on stage or in front of the camera or behind the camera in any number of ways. In some ways, I do also feel like our work here, right, as we put on events, put on meetings and stuff like that, is a sense of a practice of putting on art, right? Like art in some ways, performing art is not, it's an active verb, right? And I think that's, we are in many ways storytellers, just like our other arts and culture groups. But it has been, it's been really, really nice to kind of revisit old scripts and potentially think about committing to a new idea.
Yeah, I'm grateful for the chance to do this. And I don't know if it's for you, Lindsay, but I do think it just keeps me connected to the act of creating, the act of, being part of the arts and culture scene in Milwaukee, Wisconsin is cool. Not just because it's my day job, but rather because of the passion of it. And it connects me with so many more people in it. So I'm glad to have this opportunity as well. So, and speaking of opportunities, I'm really excited to introduce our guest who will be with us after the break. It's Heather Dunn, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of West Bend Mutual Insurance Company. She's wrapping up her tenure as one of the three co-chairs of the Uniting Performing Arts Fund 2021 community campaign, but also brought to the role a lifelong passion for the arts and a determination to preserve and grow the arts community in the Milwaukee area. Originally from Sheboygan, or as she likes to call it, Chevegas, she got involved in the performing arts as a child. And in fact, her first job was in high school as a Dickens caroler at the American Club in Kohler. She also sang in college and performed on the side while studying business admin and ultimately her path in the finance world. But she also spent a semester abroad in Salzburg, Austria. Yes, inspired by that movie, The Sound of Music. We'll look forward to delving into that as well as how she and her fellow folks at UPAF helped our performing arts organizations weather the storm in the recent pandemic. After the break, it's Heather Dunn. Tomorrow will be a better day. 'Cause we are proud of what we know. Welcome to the podcast, Heather.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We're so glad you joined us today. Because I know there's, as we're speaking, there's lots of numbers that are not being crunched. And there's lots of there's lots of spreadsheets that aren't being collated in the way they need to be.
Well, Mac, let's not give her too much grief, given that West Bend is the provider of our D&O insurance. And so in the event that something bad happens, we definitely need somebody.
Oh, that, you know what I like is that if anything bad happens now, we've got a direct line to the heart of the matter.
That's actually right. We don't have to get to customer service. We can just
we could just go right. It's like, yeah, could you stick around?
I do not want to be part of Acclaim, guys. Let's not.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, man, that was a long time ago. You know, that'd be like an undercover boss situation if you're doing like the Acclaim. It's like, oh, so it's true. Dether Hun, my new coworker, Dether. Interesting. Okay. And I was like, nah, that's years ago, fellas. That's I'm executive now. We don't do anyway. Thanks for indulging us, and we're so glad you've joined us on the pod because you've definitely come up on our radar as someone who even though you're not formally an artist or you know capital A artist or creative, it's evident how it informs your leadership practice and that. And we're excited to tell that story and hear more about how that unfolds for you. So thanks for joining us.
Yes.
So we're going to start with a classic. One of our favorite questions is that we would love to hear a story about an arts and cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you. It could be formative years. It could be something that happened recently. It could be something you instigated, like I performed, or it could be something you experienced, maybe a book you read or an exhibit that really struck you. We'd love to hear about that experience and why did it resonate with you?
Yeah, when I think back, I laugh because the first picture I remember having of being in a performance, I was something called the Snow Queen. And so my former boss definitely laughed about that. He's like, oh, that's interesting as a 5-year-old that was your role. But my brother was in it with me, and I think he'd be more mortified to realize that he was also in that performance. But when I think about, you know, where kind of this whole track of staying engaged with the arts came from, I mean, it really did start at that formative level of being in school. And I grew up in Sheboygan, Shevegas, Shebordom, whatever we want to call it these days. And it was this great little microcosm of a small town that was close to a big city. So I remember reading in school, we read Charlotte's Web, and we got to take the big bus down to downtown Milwaukee to the Pabst Theater and walk into that grand facility and see, you know, the play on stage. And that was one of the first times I just remember like, wow, it's so cool to take a trip and go see the city. I mean, that was a big piece of it too. Probably the first time I had ever seen Milwaukee. Yeah. And then as you know, and that was in the good place where schools had those kind of funds to go do those activities. And, you know, that's lacking now. We're trying to find other ways to make that happen through some of the groups I'm sure we'll talk about later. But even in middle school, I remember The Outsiders. Remember the movie, The Outsiders?
Pony Boy, Stay Gold.
Yeah, right. Well, we read that book in school and I think I saw the play before I saw the movie. So just kind of having that, you know, full circle experience of experiencing arts in live and in person, or maybe through movies, maybe through books. It's kind of come full circle that continues today.
Was there a particular book that you had read that you immediately imagined yourself as? Well, again, you didn't read anything about the Snow Queen. That was just the algorithm. Right. That was a great algorithm in the sky making that happen. But was there any part that you read and then you're like, oh, that, or like even a movie or a play, you're like, oh, that's me. Like, oh my gosh.
Oh gosh. Yes, of course. Number one, The Sound of Music. And that I can tell you literally today, I still want to be Julia Andrews because I went so far as to pick Salzburg, Austria as the place I studied abroad. Because that's
based on that experience.
Yes.
Based on
I
sound.
Love that movie. Totally wanted to be in.
Yeah.
So I lived in Salzburg actually for a semester in college and danced around the mountains and pretended like I was going over into Switzerland, which is actually not how the geography there works at all.
But otherwise you checked out.
Checked it out.
Okay. But otherwise, like the whole vibe was what you expected, right?
Yeah,
from the movie.
Absolutely beautiful. You're right. Mozart's birthplace. So it's got a lot of arts and music going for it. So beautiful place.
That Sound of Music in my household is big as my wife. She loves that movie for herself. And I watch it and I kind of go like, has anybody thought to do like a Wicked style alternative, like world building thing about the governess? Like how we don't know the governess's deal. Come on.
I like that.
And she's like, why do you care? Like what? Like nobody, you're supposed to hate the governess. That's it sets up the dynamic. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Like, I think there's something there. I think there's something there. I don't know how that, I'm pitching it to you. Cause it sounds like you're a Sound of Music super fan. Would that play for you? Would you watch an alt play about like, you know, alt about the governess's deal? And like,
I think I'd rather go after Liesl. I wanted to know what happened.
Yeah. So anyways, that'll be another pod. We'll sketch that out. We'll sketch out the beats on that and we'll pitch it locally. We'll see if you can probably get done.
As someone who's young, who's sort of engaged in the arts and, you know, obviously loved music, loved film, loved, you know, all of the stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Was there a moment where you sort of hit a fork in the road where you're like, you know, I'm going to either continue down the road of being an arts person, right? Just quote unquote, or I'm going to go down this other path of being, you know, a finance leader or a business person, right? Was there a moment or did it just sort of like how did that happen for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say there were almost two forks that happened. The first fork was my freshman year in high school when I made the varsity swim team, and I also got a really big lead, a decent role in the musical. And I remember, I told my kids this story. I remember putting the quarter into the payphone to call my mother, because that's what we had back then.
There you go.
And saying, Mom, I can't do both. I mean, I tried to do both for a couple weeks, and it just wasn't going to work, and I had to make a decision. And it felt like the biggest decision of my life, because up until that point I had swam, you know, 5 days a week for years. And I really, like, I felt this pull to wanting to do something different, and I chose the musical. And you know, that's the path that started the whole, hey, I still could do sports. I still did soccer in spring, so it was fine. But I then really kind of dug into making the music stay a piece of what I wanted to do. And then I'd say, as you know, I was deciding in college, it was also that too. Like, okay, am I going to get a degree? You know, where I'm taking risk in the arts world, where you don't know how that's all going to pan out. And I decided to kind of try again to do both, where I audited music classes and did music on the side to kind of have a stress relief valve. But stuck to the business side of wanting to make that my formal career. And you're right, there is always kind of that balance for some of our artists today, where with COVID, I mean, you saw one of the things we worried about as leaders trying to keep these groups together is, are we going to lose this talent that lives in this city because they have to make a decision about a livelihood now that they can't support by being so uncertain? And I'm sure they face that almost every day. You know, it's a gut-wrenching decision sometimes, but thankfully we have such great gems here that we're looking to sustain. So today, yeah, just trying to balance it out still personally and aspects of both, and kind of using my business sense to support that artistic sense that maybe I didn't go down.
We were, I tell this story a lot, but I think it's really, I think central to this conversation, which is when we started Imagine MKE, we had obviously a bunch of service providers come try to sell us stuff, right? And one of them was a retirement plan. And so the woman comes in, senior vice president of whatever, I can't remember the name of the firm, but she comes in and we're talking about what Imagine does. And I share with her some of the mission, and she shares with me that as a young person in finance, back when she was much younger, she's in her sort of near retirement age at this point. She loved to sing, and earlier in her career, she hid that from her employers because they didn't want she didn't want them to know that she would either potentially leave or worse, sort of be weird, right? Like, she didn't fit into sort of the corporate culture because she had this talent for singing. She loved to sing, and so, you know, she sang in, you know, choruses and whatnot over the years, and she still does. But like she expressed the sense of like not being able to kind of like merge what she was good at, right, which is finance, and something else that she was good at, which was singing. And I think we at Imagine believe that if you can actually merge those two things, it actually makes you better at your job. You show up better at your job. You show up more fully at home. And like, you know, if we can figure out a way, right, to sort of like find opportunities where we can tell stories like yours, right, where it is not one or the other, right? You're just kind of, you can do both, right? It is both things that drive us that I think is really, really powerful. So thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, I think we're at the point where now we're talking so much about flexible work that you can bring your whole self to work these days, you know, and share all of those pieces. And I hope it's not looked down upon. I don't feel it's looked down upon. If anything, we embrace it. You know, we like asking those questions in interviews of what do you do outside of work? Because it tells us, do you have commitments and motivation somewhere else? And we have found that those folks that we hire that have those creative avenues tend to work out better in the workforce. So I do think it's something we're hopefully all starting to embrace better than hide. That's kind of terrible to hear that couldn't share that, you know, but.
Well, I imagine that that firm, did we go with that firm, David? Did we end up picking
it? We didn't.
Okay, so there you go. That's why. When you heard like, wait a minute, they're stifling you. We don't want to.
Yeah, right.
But your firm has a band.
Yeah.
So speak to that. What's that mean? Like, what does that mean to have a company band? Because I think that's what you're saying. It's like, yeah, we embrace this. Not just we embrace this. We want to recognize it. And
we don't have a company band.
We don't have a company
band.
We have a company karaoke set.
We have a company karaoke. That's right.
I love it.
Like, but not a band. Tell us about that. Like, what is it like? Tell us about your experience in the band or what does that mean to have a band?
I have to tell you, the band is on hiatus right now. And part of it is because we lost our lead singer who left to go move somewhere. And then we lost the IT guy that set up the stuff for us.
So you lost your roadie. You lost the lead. We lost the lead singer.
We're working on that.
Once you lose the drummer, it's bad.
No, we still have the drummer.
You got the drummer. That's good.
And we still have the outbuilding that lets us go practice. So we got a space. Our garage is available. So that's good. But there's been actually two generations of a band here since I've been here, and they all have kind of predicated on this other beautiful side of what we do around community and fundraising. So our band, we really only perform for company kind of fundraising events. That's all we've really been doing. The latest iteration of that, we called ourselves Bending West. So we
That's good.
Mark even helped us with t-shirts. We had t-shirts, so it's kind of cool. But what I loved about it is it brought together people who, you know, I didn't work with most of the folks that are in the band in work capacity. You know, people in claims, people in IT that maybe are, you know, aren't on the projects I work on. So it is this kind of microcosm of you just find commonalities to come together, and it became kind of like this tight group of folks, some executives, some non-executives, and we didn't want it to be like, oh, the executives are making the decision in the band. Like, no. Yeah. We're a band. We're all going to do this.
We're a band.
It was really fun. And I don't know if we're, you know, recordable or anything.
How big was the band?
Probably seven of us.
This is almost like a Modest Mouse situation.
Yeah.
Where you got like one guy on steel drum, one person on
singers,
like, you got to hold it. And what was your role in the band? What were you playing?
I was backup singer. I had a couple.
I don't want to say what was. This is coming back. We're bringing this band back.
I really hope.
But you were backup singer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which was weird for me. I had to flip to like pop music from, you know, I grew up classically trained. So to flip to singing, like.
Give me a set list. Give me a set list at the last Bending West.
It was a lot of Bryan Adams and Five Non-Blondes was my song. Of course, you guys know that one. So.
Little What's Up? You're doing What's Up?
What's Up?
What's going on? All right.
Which is just like, you know, get the crowd involved, have everybody sing.
I get it. Heather, I got to be real. I feel like I can be honest with you and transparent with you. I hate that song in karaoke because it's like a 10-minute song. It's like a 10-minute song. So I'm sure you crush it. And also I have to say, the people who picked that song shouldn't be picking that song. I think you're probably credentialed enough to execute that song well. But so you're at What's Up, a lot of Bryan Adams. Are we talking like the Summer of 69? Or are we talking the schmaltzy stuff where he was just doing
Summer
soundtracks?
Of 69.
Okay, so like the, you know, Cuts Like a Knife, something that cuts like a knife stuff. All right, so, and you all would, how long's the set? Probably 10 songs?
I would say 10 songs.
What's closing? Like, what's the thing that everybody's like crushing it? Like, everybody's like,
I don't even know.
You don't know?
I can't tell you what we close. We mix it up so many times.
Was there an encore number? Was there like a number you're coming
out?
Like, there's no encore.
Because there was a bar right next to where we're usually performing. Right. So let's just go do that.
Oh, that's so funny.
I love it. But I also love what you're talking about, that in that setting, that was an opportunity for folks just to kind of abandon the formal roles, but to get to know each other in that way and appreciate each other in that way. And, you know, that's cool. Cause I'm sure that adds another element of connectivity, you know, in the space and with morale.
Yeah, completely.
Stuff like that. That's super neat.
So I think you've in many of the stories you've told already, like have kind of alluded to this next question, right? Which is, I think, you know, given that you have this incredibly interesting background of being, you know, a finance leader, like a serious finance leader in our region here, and also an artist with and a creative person who's doing a lot of creative things, how have you experienced the relationship between those two dimensions in your own, you know, personal or professional leadership at West Bend or in other professional roles you might have had?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times you start in the nonprofit world because you build skills that then can work in other business settings. That's actually one of the groups that I'm with is another group I'm with is called Milwaukee Women Inc. And it's talking about how to get more women on boards in Wisconsin and throughout, you know, the country. It's kind of a movement that's had some good traction lately. And we did talk there too about, you know, if you're going to do nonprofit work, do it well, because that's where you start making connections across the city or across different entities that maybe someday will elevate your ability to serve at different levels and maybe, you know, more formal settings that are profit or whatever. So I've naturally taken that to heart that when I decide to get involved in these nonprofits, I'm going to do it to the same level as if it was a profit, right, entity, or if I was getting paid for this work. And some of those skills you learn and those connections you make across the company. I mean, I remember being part of a junior board at the Skylight Theater and it was, you know, really new into my career in Milwaukee in my 20s. So I had time before kids. and it was just this group that helped fundraise for their one big gala fundraiser. And I got to meet, you know, the artistic staff, the office staff, kind of learn how it works from the back office side. You learn how to fundraise, which is not always easy. Connecting to people, asking for money, that good stuff, put on a show or a gala, make it happen. But at the end of the day, I was also doing the 990, which for me, I had never touched a 990. It's, you know, the tax form for nonprofits to submit. It's a pain in the rear end. It's not fun. but I learned like the complexity that comes in for a nonprofit at that level. And it just kind of gives you different perspective of, okay, there's a lot that goes into any entity that gets stood up. There's a lot that goes into it. And a lot of those skills, and you know, you can take back to the office and change the way you're looking at your spreadsheet or whatever. So that's been kind of a good mix too. But what I most appreciate in all of these situations with the arts is how you just meet people from different backgrounds. Even in Sheboygan, when I was in that musical I talked about in high school, we had a combined musical that was North and South High School. And if you know anything about Sheboygan, there is a massive dividing line about you either go to North or you go to South, and we do not talk to each other nicely. It still exists today. It's kind of this like crazy line. We had to come together as one group to perform a musical. So we were driving across town for practices, and you just meet people from such different walks of life that I think that really helps. The arts just completely help us to get connected to people we wouldn't otherwise probably seek out to meet and connect. And I found that in the nonprofit world too. It's just natural. You learn all kinds of different things across different places and things. So it bleeds all over.
That also affirms, Heather, that the affinity of theater nerds is legit. It transcends all these things. I mean, all playing, you know.
And you're going to say accounts are boring. Come on now.
So you mentioned not just your own practice, right? As a performer, as a musician yourself, and continue to have that as part of your life. You also mentioned at the top, you know, your old leadership roles, right? And you start, you know, you did with Skylight for a bit, and now you've been on the board of United Performing Arts Fund in Milwaukee, as well as the Museum of Wisconsin Art. So now there's roles, right, that you're supporting that and doing that work. And so, you know, let's talk about hashtag real talk, real time. You know, you the pandemic, right? From a performer there standpoint, was catastrophic.
Right.
And probably called upon UPAF to work in ways it normally hadn't worked in the past, had to innovate, pivot, all the words.
All the words.
What do you think were, from your vantage point, what were new mental models or mindsets that had to be cultivated to adapt? How do you think that is going to stick? Because I don't think we're ever going to go back to pre-March 2021 or 2020, right? Like, there's elements of this that are going to stay with us, or maybe we want to hold because we have to adapt to a new reality. Could you speak to the mindsets, which inform the actions, right? Which inform how we do things. So
it was such a crazy time. I mean, when that happened, obviously the business side of what was going on was kind of all over the place. You had no idea what was going to happen. But then the nonprofit side too kicked up so hard. And what I tell people is, wow, when it all started to go down, I probably spent half my time on work and half my time on the nonprofits, because you were just trying to make sure, and luckily work was doing okay. It was the nonprofit side that we were terrified about. But quick action. I mean, that's what started to happen is at West Bend, we have a foundation, and we decided, okay, instead of waiting till our July grant cycle, how can we just push that up and get the money going now? So we spent some energy and some time there to kind of reach out to each of our nonprofits, and all of us on that foundation board have different ones we serve. And, you know, just started to realize, like, this is the moment we're here for. It's the backstop. Same with UPath, right? There's a reason why UPath has set up contingency plans and funds and has the kind of this like model of being a steward of the money of others and paying attention to that stuff. That, thank goodness, the city of Milwaukee had something like UPath, because we're hearing now across the country that arts groups that didn't have that support or that, you know, that emergency fund, if you will, might not make it. So yeah, you're right. It was a call to action. It was a change. But I will tell you, like, I didn't get involved. We didn't get involved at a board level so much with the details of the how. I mean, the groups did a fantastic job of just deciding, okay, how are we going to do maybe some virtual things? And they did come together and collaborate on okay, can we use similar platforms? Mm-hmm. Has anybody seen this work? You know, talk about third service providers, right? We had to figure out IT models to get things virtually. Mm-hmm. And they all handled that beautifully, but they also at the same time were getting so good at being creative on the programming. Mm-hmm. So if we can't do it in a theater, but people are comfortable coming outside, well, how can we take this event outside? And we saw a lot of that. I remember one of the groups we reviewed last week talked about they changed their event into like a pajama party outside. I don't remember what the group was or what their program was, but it was like they just got really creative about still trying in any way to get it out there. And I think a lot of that is going to stick with us. We're kind of finding like, oh, maybe there is a reason to do both hybrid model, just like they're talking about gyms now, or saying, well, maybe we'll continue to have in-person gyms and a video coming in so people can do it from their home if they want to do it. I feel like maybe the arts are going to continue to stay in both of those worlds, especially with the kids. What we learned about the kids is when they got those Chromebooks and were able to do some stuff at home, we actually were maybe able to reach more kids because they were able to bring it into their houses versus just relying on it being delivered in school. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see where it all plays out, but I think they worked hard and they didn't give up, and we're still hanging in there. So it's exciting and a bit of optimism right now on like, okay, let's keep moving forward and get back to some of what it was.
I think, Heather, you named there, this is interesting duality in the sense of accessibility. Virtualness is really great because you're taking out traffic, right? You're taking out, can my mom give me a ride? Right. So those are great things. But also, I think I heard us also named, there's an importance about place. There's importance about the ritual of sitting in a dark space, and I'm paying attention to that. And there's something about how do we move forward and hold both? Because, you know, from your vantage point of performing arts, there is something about the alchemy of witnessing in real time and in the space, as we definitely know from Summerfest kicking off last night, and these things matter. So I think the key is, to your point, like how might we look forward to increasing accessibility and meaningful engagement, but also, and holding on to the fact that joining in spaces when we can do so safely or close to safely, that matter too, because we need that TLC. We need that with each other. So that's what I'm hearing you say.
One of the things that the other co-chairs at UPath shared is just about how, you know, the arts really are the place for us to heal. And I love that thought, because it is like, you can just feel when you walk into a museum, and you know, you can do that safely. Actually, museums are a second on the scale after hospitals in terms of their air quality. You can walk around and not
those
be
some
around
good talking
people,
points, so, Heather. Those right? are some good talking points as a board member of the Museum of Wisconsin Art. You're right? Like, guys, it's the second there. Most space, you know, like, let me show the PPI numbers here. That's great. I love it.
So you get in there, and it's the conversations you can have about, you know, experiencing things in person, that you're right. There is an aspect to being together, seeing something together, and then talking about it. That's part of the healing that we hope is going to take place as well.
I think, I also think that we actually buried the lead, Heather, and I have to apologize that Mac didn't say this, but congratulations on closing a campaign this year in what must have been just an incredibly challenging and difficult year, where fundraising for UPath was, I imagine, all virtual, right? So, and I know that some of the trends with workplace giving are what they are, right? So congratulations on what must have been just a really, really challenging year.
Yeah, thank you. A lot of great, you know, staff behind for that model, and it's been working, but it was challenging. I mean, you're right, workplace giving is changing. We have to figure that out, and we're trying to. But it's hard, you know, being a part of two arts groups this year was very hard, because they're not, rightfully so, they're maybe not at the priority level of some of the social services organizations, but we got to be careful not to lose them as we start to recover.
And that was a very politically savvy worded way of saying that, Heather, because we would say they are just as important as these. They are social service agents, but yeah. I appreciate where you're standing. Like, yeah. That's good that you're standing there. We're going to advocate because they heal. I do think these are, right. You know, they offer healing in the sense of people see their story. People feel connectivity. People are less isolated.
I have actually had the opportunity to have to answer that question to a couple of major donors and a couple of elected officials over this last year, right? Like as I'm trying to like establish an emergency fund for the arts, you know, a couple legislators, friends of mine, by the way, looked me in the eye and just were like, hey, David, how do we justify like talking about funding the arts when, you know, people are in the food bank lines or, you know, are getting kicked out of apartments or not being able to pay rent or you know, all the things that people were challenged by in this last year. And my answer was literally that, like, you know, when you support arts and creativity, right, you're not supporting the building, you're supporting the people who are in the building or working in the building or working to provide the program in the building, in addition to all of the stuff that Mac just talked about, right? The sort of knock on social effects of what the arts provide. And so in some ways, like by supporting, right, the arts and culture field, you're actually keeping people out of these other services. And that seemed to connect, because I think we, for far too long, right, when we think about arts and culture, we think about the institution, the big building, right? Like our art museum, right? Beautiful, but people think about the building as opposed to all of the hundreds of folks who work in that building to provide, you know? And I think that's like back to your point about running a nonprofit arts organization is just like running a business. It just happens to have a different tax status than other corporate bodies.
It's almost like the parallel in the work world where we're looking at expenses and we want to cut expenses, and that tends to be a little easier to just hack expenses than it is to figure out how you avoid them. It's the avoidance thing, right? And so, right. I sit in that world too. Like, how can you prove that something didn't happen because you did right? And that's where we're at with the arts. It's the mental health side of this whole thing that's gone on. We maybe can't quantify it. We maybe can't point to, you know, here's a loaf of bread. You can point to that. It's harder to point to, well, what did somebody receive or benefit did we gain as a society? But there is something there. I should have brought you on the campaign trail to flip my a little bit there.
Well, you know, Heather, this past
Patrick
week
might recruit me next year.
Patrick, that's gonna take care of that, right? Well, Heather, I mean, just one story, I think, just to amplify that we just experienced this week in Metcalf Park. We partner with Metcalf Park Community Bridges, and they partner with artists working in education and connected with the Jewish community pantry out on Center Street. And they just did a new mural, right, on that faces Center Street, right? Mm-hmm. And the way they did that mural, Metcalf Park Community Bridges had neighbors interview 100 neighbors saying, what are the images that you want to see in your neighborhood? And they heard from 100 people, and they gave that feedback to that artist to say, how do you take this feedback? And the people saw themselves in that mural, beautiful, right? And in partnership with the JCC, right, who knows that, hey, we've got all this space for people to see themselves. Mm. And so we could go like, well, how much was the paint and how much was the artist's time? But what's the cost of all those people driving by and seeing, you know, I said I want this, I see that there, and that's who I am, and this is my space. And I think it's tough to quantify that, right? But we know it's real. We know it's tangible. And I'm just saying out loud to set the case where we're going to get a number on it someday.
Yeah,
and you're going to make a great spreadsheet that shows it, because you got letters after your name that validates that stuff. I'm just some Yahoo. I'm just some dumb guy on the internet. but thanks for validating that and affirming that, because that's our hope, right? Is how do we make that more visible, and how do we make that more seen, where it's arts is less as this luxury, but rather it's actually what allows us all to feel human and feel rich. I'm sort of, as we're kind of winding down this conversation, first of all, I can't wait to see Bending West perform at the Johnson Control stage at Summerfest.
We just had Sarah Smith Pankeri and Bob Babish on the podcast. I think we're gonna pitch them next year.
Bob said, like, I get one group to put on the board. He's like, all right, there's a big board. You get one index card.
We'll be at 9 a.m. on Bending West.
Wedding West on Sunday, right?
Yeah, you get the hot 7 a.m. Sunday block. Right. Yeah, and you might have to climb a fence. Like, I don't know. That's part of the rock and roll aesthetic. Oh, all this being, as we're winding, of course, we're winding that down, but we're also, we also like want to build on this. And you have a lot of juice, Heather. Let's not lie. You got a lot of power in role, but we also have the power to make you the city's czar of arts and culture. And so it only lasts as long as this conversation, though. So it's very fleeting.
That's why we have it as the last question as opposed to the first question. Yeah. So we have, you know, less responsibility to have to make it happen.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. About 30 seconds to, yeah.
It's a bit of a game we play. So you got to work quick. But for you, Heather, as the czar of arts and culture, what would be the first policy you would pass?
Oh, I've been thinking about this one a lot. And I just want people to get to the arts. I mean, at the end of the day, when you go experience it, you get hooked and you're going to stay. So I was trying to figure out, gosh, all these people in this town that go buy all these beers at a bar, like how could we get them to walk down the street and see a performance in the middle of, you know, some of those other things that we do around this town. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the policy would be there. I'm not a big, you know, add a bunch of taxes kind of girl to things, but, but you know, there is some connection there. We got to just keep it getting people connected and maybe forcing the connections that need to happen to see these things live and not just talk about them but be engaged in them. So if anybody else has some great ideas on policy, I'm with you guys. I can maybe help execute. I'm a good executor, maybe not as great of a strategist, but it's just those connections, because once you get there, you know, you're hooked and you can bring people along. So it's a beautiful thing in this town. Appreciate you guys helping out with it.
Yeah, awesome. Heather, how can our audience find you? And it could be in role or it could be on stage. How could they? This is the plug section, and usually we don't have CFOs on the plug themselves.
Yeah,
but we didn't want to deny you that opportunity. Well, how can folks find you?
Well, you know, I'm up in West Bend, so make the journey up here. We got a beautiful farmers market. This museum is rocking and rolling. Our downtown area is being revitalized. So make the trip up to West Bend, and I'll meet you on the street. It's a great little town. So. yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I work here and live here. So it's West Bend's it.
Right on. Well, thanks again for taking the time to share with us again the reflections of your leadership, as well as how the arts continue to enhance and augment the way you do your leadership and your work. And thanks for continuing to do that. And again, we look forward to checking out Benning West someday. I'm going to make that happen. We're going to make that happen.
Yeah, we're making it happen. We're going to make it happen. That was
great. Thanks for the time, guys.
Wow. That was lovely to connect with Heather. First time I ever met Heather Dunn. And that was great.
Yeah, really, really good. I was shocked at how cool the name Benning West is for a band, right? Isn't that like a 90s sort of mopey kind of?
I was going to say Benning West has very, stabbing westward. Yeah, like gerund, gerund verb plus something else is very 90s band, right? But hey, man, they pulled it off.
I hope they find a couple new folks to reform the Benning West West Bend band.
I think it'd be cool if they evolved into sort of like a German industrial techno outfit. You know, just totally departure of like what they were before, and you know, just doing Kraftwerk covers. Yeah. That would be super cool. But also really appreciative of, again, just reiterating this thing where like there aren't these walls up between disciplines, right? One can be a business leader, but one can also be not just passionate about the arts, but also a leader for arts and culture.
And a practitioner too, right? I think that really is the thing, right? That like, you know, and I think this is something that I think we believe and imagine, but I think we oftentimes don't make it as explicit as we could, which is that like, if you come to your job or your volunteer work or whatever it might be in a more fulsome sense of yourself, and you bring all the different parts of yourself to that activity, you become a better CEO, you become a better, employee, you become a better actor, you become a better all of these things, because you're not disconnected from yourself, right? And I think that is the thing, right, of like trying to drive this sense of connection, not only within the arts and culture sector, but how the arts and culture sector and creativity connects to all the other things that we do as a society.
Yes. And I think this is a call for all of our Fortune 500 companies or those types in town to have their own cover bands. I want to see a battle of the cover bands, like Harley. How come Harley Davidson doesn't have a cover band? How do you not? Like
Davidson Harley?
Davidson Harley.
That's right.
It would be Davidson Harley. Yes. And they just need ZZ Top covers. Like it would just be ZZ Top covers. Like why not? Or I want to know what Johnson Controls cover band would be.
Controls Johnson? This is all good, right? Like this is the backwards universe of
exactly
where right. Everybody's got it.
I think Johnson Controls would probably do like they would probably be doing the German industrial covers, right? That would just seem like a natural. Yeah, tweet at us. What do you think? Tell us what do you think are the titans of industry in our city? What would be their cover band, their company band, and what would be the genre? That'd be a fun game. That's a challenge we're putting out there, and then we'll make sure that the Imagine stage at Summerfest is just all these cover bands
next performing. Year. Bob Babish, we're coming at you.
Yeah,
Bob. With all of the corporate band, I'm booking, corporate bands.
That's you know right. What it is? It's gonna be just like this plywood stage that's adjacent to like, adjacent to a cheese curd booth.
And you know who'd be in that cheese curd booth with us?
Our listeners.
Yeah, of course, our listeners.
Thanks for listening. If you listened and enjoyed this episode, by the way, you don't have to listen to enjoy it. You could just say you enjoyed it. That's like me in several movies in our American canon that I said I've watched, but I didn't watch. I've just read about. Anyway, either way, support the podcast, share it with others, post about it on social media, leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine's podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE podcast network. Make sure you also listen and subscribe to the back catalog of Black Imagination and back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all of the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE, but on Facebook, it's just Imagine MKE.
Thanks again, and we'll catch you next Tuesday when we have another great guest in our podcast studio talking about all the great stuff happening in Milwaukee's arts and culture system.